Homeward is committed to partnering with parents and equipping you with the resources you need to raise your kids to become responsible adults. And Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment company, is proud to partner with Homeward to bring you the following podcast presentation.
When you feel that you're a failure yourself and you're still in your failure situation, you don't want to talk to your kids about something that you feel you don't know about. And so many parents feel like they are not doing well with their finances. They're deeply in debt or they're struggling and they don't know how to talk to their kids because they feel like failures, like they're guilt-ridden, that they don't qualify to be able to teach their kids about money, which is quite wrong. That is so wrong.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Well, what do you think? Did that sound like your situation? You were listening to just a snippet of author and speaker Mary Hunt talking about some tips for raising financially confident kids. And one of the reasons that we as parents don't have financially confident kids is these kids do not have financially confident parents. Well, during the next half hour here on the Homeward broadcast, you're going to get some tips for raising financially confident kids. And one of those tips involves dealing with where you are in terms of the way you approach money. From the studios at the Homeward Center for Youth and Family on the campus of Azusa Pacific University, welcome to Homeward with parenting and family expert Dr. Jim Burns. I'm Roger Marsh. Speaking of money, I want to thank you for the money that you send our way. We're a completely listener-supported broadcast outreach, and we appreciate and really need your tax-deductible contributions each and every month. And now with part one of today's program, here's Jim.
Welcome to Homeward. I'm Jim Burns. Very good session today. We're going to talk with Mary Hunt. We're talking about tips for raising financially confident kids. Yes, that is possible. She's written a great book called Raising Financially Confident Kids. Mary is an award-winning and best-selling author whose books have sold more than 1 million copies. That's incredible, by the way. Syndicated columnist who is read by hundreds of thousands of readers each week. She's married to Harold, and they live in Orange County, California, right where our studio is, although we're on the phone today. Mary, welcome to our broadcast.
Well, thank you so much, Jim. Great to be with you.
Great to have you with us. Hey, you know, it seems like so many parents are so proactive when they want to teach their kids about sex. They want to teach their kids about, you know, soccer and education, but they sort of gloss over money. I mean, why is that?
I know this from personal experience. When you feel that you're a failure yourself and you're still in your failure situation, you don't want to talk to your kids about something that you feel you don't know about. And so many parents feel like they are not doing well with their finances. They're deeply in debt or they're struggling and they don't know how to talk to their kids because they feel like failures, like they're guilt-ridden, that they don't qualify to be able to teach their kids about money, which is it's quite wrong. That is so wrong. What I tell parents is just because maybe you did bad things in high school, does that mean that you're not going to teach your kids to stay away from drugs or to live an upstanding life? No, not at all. So parents need to realize that they don't need to be 100% successful to be able to teach their own children.
Right, and it actually helps them, I would imagine. You start
Absolutely.
Teaching your kids stewardship
teaching
issues.
Teaching teaches the teacher, for sure. That is absolutely true.
Now, you actually wrote that you said, and I love how you said this, you said, I awoke from a 12-year spending coma to discover we were in the fast lane to financial ruin. So you and Harold had to dig yourself out of a mountain of debt as well.
Yeah, and I don't want to pull him into it because it was me. It was horrible what I did. The first 12 years of my marriage, I became the consumer credit industry's ideal customer. I believed everything that was said, that every credit card that I received was sent to me. And this was back, you know, before the law said that they couldn't send them unsolicited. Jim, I had a wallet stacked full of credit cards. And I'm talking about every department store, every store in Southern California, every credit card known to womankind. I had it because I was their ideal customer. And they reflected who I was. I found my identity and all the different colors I had. And I wish that I would have said I kept them only for emergencies. Well, maybe I did. I had many, many, many emergencies. And living on credit became our way of life. And it got to the point where, you know, we crossed that threshold where my husband could no longer pay all the bills every single month and fell to that minimum monthly payment option, which, you know, all the credit companies in the world just do a cheer when that happens because then they know they've got you. If they can get you to that over that threshold where you can't pay the entire balance in full every single month, now you become theirs. And that was a downward slope that seemed like we couldn't stop.
Well, it's interesting when you say that because, and I'd mentioned before that you and Harold, but you said, no, it was me. But really, when we're in that kind of a mountain of debt, it brings in major issues for a marriage as well, doesn't it?
Oh, I say that each little brick of that situation builds a gigantic wall that at first you can kind of step over it,
right.
But then it gets higher and higher, right. And pretty soon you can't go around it, you can't get through it. And I mean, it builds a big barrier in your life, in your marriage, in your communication, in your relationship with friends, family, you know, everyone, and especially with God. I mean, it creates this huge thing in your life. I just can't say enough about what debt is like. It's like cancer. It grows, and it soon takes over.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because I remember when my kids were little, we would go to the bank, and they would expect that if I put in this little plastic thing, money would just start shooting out at us. And that was, you know, Daddy, just get more money. You know, we can do this because all you got to do is put that little plastic thing in the ATM, and the money comes out. But you're saying in your book, Raising Financially Confident Kids, that really, you've got to help kids get their arms around debt. Even as we were saying, there's so many of our listeners who they don't have their arms around their own debt, but you're saying help kids early. How do you do that?
Well, it's the whole plan that my husband and I stumbled upon with when I had hit bottom and knew that we had to do something or my kids were going to turn out exactly like me.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up with these realistic things is that, first of all, the only way to teach children about money realistically is to allow them to make their own independent financial decisions from an early age and then require that they have to live with the consequences. Now, if those are great consequences, fantastic. If they're horrible, they've got to live with it. They've got to suffer. They've got to feel that on a level that they can handle according to their age without the parents bailing them out, which is the hardest thing in the world. Jim, you're a father. You know what it's like. We don't want our children to suffer.
Oh, I had one of my daughters who's now, they're all in their 20s, but she showed me her health insurance bill. We had suggested that she go to the emergency ward, and she did. And then she showed it's like $1,100. And the last thing I wanted her to do was have that kind of debt as a young, you know, 20-something. But the fact of the matter is she has to learn it. You told a story about, I think it was your son, Jeremy, who you were giving $50 a month, $5 for giving, $5 for savings, but then he spent $39.92 in like 1 hour. At Toys R Us or someplace.
You know, the book is full of these kinds of stories, but it's absolutely true. We came up with this plan for our kids that we, and they didn't know this part, you know, and people really, when you read this book, do not leave this out on the coffee table for your older children to read. No. It'll give away all your secrets.
That's right.
But what we decided to do was instead of doling out to our kids a little bit of money all the time, which, you know, kids always have their hands out for something, that we would figure out what it was we were going to spend on them anyway, reduce it just a bit, and then put it into their care and possession at the beginning of the month, you know, teach them how to manage it. We had the 10% rule, 10% giving, 10% saving, and 80%. You could do whatever you wanted with. But by the way, here's the responsibility list. Anything on this list, Jeremy, when he started at first day of grade 6, look at this list, son. Read this. Anything on this list. Mommy and Daddy are never, ever going to pay for anything on here again as long as you live on this earth. Do you understand this? You know, oh, sure, you know. And on the list at his age were things that were not necessary. We did not put school clothes. We didn't put haircuts, those kinds of things. He was too young to be able to manage that. We wanted to start out commensurate with his age. And so on there were his optionals. You know, kids have them.
Sure.
Back then, a few years ago, he loved skateboards, and he needed skateboard paraphernalia. He loved video games, which, if you remember, we didn't have them in our homes. Kids had to play these. You know, there was Pac-Man, and there was all these things. Anywhere you went, you had to drop a quarter. Well, that was the bane of our existence. This kid could go through $10 in quarters in 3 minutes flat. So, of course, that was on the list. Stickers, school, extra things at school, lunch bunch at school on Fridays where he had to bring money. Everything was on his list, these optionals in life that we knew if he chose not to spend his money on them, nothing bad would happen. And we put him through boot camp. You know, that was 3 months during the summer before his grade 6. And the kid had it down flat. He knew exactly everything we could throw up to him. He was so thrilled that he was going to be able to manage money that, I mean, he was like a little walking businessman. I mean, he had it down. So the day came, and, you know, the first day, we called it salary. We wanted him to realize that as part of our family, he was going to become a manager of money. He would get this money every month. He had responsibilities. He had to give. He had to save. He had to make decisions. And, you know, handed him the money, $10 $5 bills. We didn't tell him how much 10% would be. He had to figure this out using his math skills. And by the way, he figured that out very quickly. And sure enough, you know, he had $40. And after school, came home, requested to be driven to Toys R Us. And I just go, whoa, what? You know, I'm trying to keep it quiet here, because our rule was that parents would be hands-off. His decisions would be allowed to be made. He would have to suffer or enjoy the consequences thereof. Well, like you just said, he blew it big time. He went to Toys R Us. We stood there for like 2 hours just dying inside. My husband and I go, oh, my gosh, what have we done? This is the dumbest thing that could ever happen. Sure enough, he bought one toy. The kid had more money than he'd ever had in his life.
Sure.
And there he was in this store, which to him was the world, you know, to make a decision. And he made a bad one. He spent it all on himself. And it was the longest trip home you could ever imagine. I mean, I was livid. I was angry. How could he do this? You know, we had agreed not to say a word, and we didn't. And it was a very, very, very long month. Because on his responsibility list, of course, was birthday gifts for friends. You know, it seemed like we were nonstop birthday parties at our house, and our kids wanted to buy the biggest, best gifts they could find for their friends. So he couldn't go to a party. He had no money to buy a gift. And part of our rules were as well, there will be no loans. There will be no advances. Even if we are standing in the store and you decide you want something and forgot to bring your money, no, we will not advance you the money for 1 hour till you get home and pay us back.
It's good parenting.
See, this was really important. I mean, we were creating values. We were creating lifetime rules. He never once asked to have the rules bent. He didn't realize that, you know, in the big world, you can call for a credit limit increase. You know, we didn't teach him that part. It was just no debt, none, no loans. And he missed a party. He missed a lunch bunch at school. The kid suffered in ways that were very telling, but his mom suffered more than he ever could, because my whole thing in life, I'd gotten horribly in debt trying to make life perfect for my kids and smooth the path so they would never suffer. We had a lot of learning to do in our home, and it was, as I said, a very, very long month. But the second month, his little pendulum went right to the other opposite. He became the tightest, tightwad person of the century. Yeah, he was invited to another birthday party, and he bought a gift, and it cost $1. $1 at the grocery store. You know, that box of, that little bag of 10 spider rings or something? Birthday party favors? That's what he bought his friend. Now my pendulum's to the other end. You know, like, how could he do this? He's going to embarrass me. You don't take a $1 right, gift right. to a friend's birthday party. But I had to examine my own heart, you know. Was I trying to be the special friend of that kid's mother? Yeah. But I got to tell you something, Jim. This was the most amazing thing to watch month after month as his pendulum started to calm down and he found his groove and realized the value of saving money and that he could see it growing in the bank and that the decisions he made would impact his ability to do the things that he wanted during the month. And I got to tell you, I stood there and almost cried my eyes out. He didn't hear me, but he was on the phone with his friend whose parents had called and asked if he could go to the movie with them. Well, the rule was that if he went to movies with friends, his choice, he would buy the ticket. If it was a family outing, then we would negotiate, or Mom and Dad would buy that, and he would be invited as our guest. I mean, it sounds cold and heartless, but really, these rules just work so well. And, you know, for him to say, you know what, I just can't afford it. I'm thinking, he didn't say my mom and dad won't give me the money. He said, I can't afford it. Well, soon his friends realized that he was managing money, and with each successive year, the beginning of the school year, each year, he got a raise, big raise. But all it was more things we were putting on his responsibility list that we were going to pay for anyway. And by the time our boys were in high school, they were managing everything. We never paid for gasoline. I mean, we paid for it, but we put it through their filter. You know, we put it into their hands. Car expenses, school expenses, trips, clothes, haircuts. The yearbook in high school, that really expensive thing, the prom, everything was manageable because they had their salary. They got it once a month. They decided what to do with the money. And there were so many lessons taught. Yeah, we soon turned over to them money for things that were necessary and required. The rule was, yes, you have to get a haircut, but you can decide where. And they soon found friends whose moms would cut it for free, you know? And I go, oh, well, that wasn't in my plan. But hey, they were learning about life.
It's great stuff, Mary. I mean, incredibly practical, helpful, also just good, you know, parenting rules. Listen, we're going to take a break. We're going to come right back. Mary Hunt with us. Tips for raising financially confident kids, as you can see as she was telling that story. You know, not always easy. Sometimes it makes us look bad because even when her son is making the $1, you know, birthday gift, we're going, oh, my goodness, you know. Other moms are buying better stuff, but great learning lesson. And you know what? I bet you she's got some financially confident young adults now. We'll talk about that in a minute. Roger?
Well, Jim, maybe the moms are thinking that, but the kids are the ones buying the gifts here under Mary's plan, and that's a good distinction for us to make here, too. Give our kids some responsibility and let them make their own decisions. A better way to learn? I can't think of one. Today here on the Homeward Broadcast, Dr. Jim Burns joined in studio. He's on the studio, and she's on the phone. Mary Hunt is with us. She's the author of Raising Financially Confident Kids and a host of other resources. We encourage you to check out homeward.com, where you'll find links to everything that Mary's working on as well. And as we get back into this program now, think about how you can become a more financially confident parent who can raise financially confident kids. Here once again is Jim Burns.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Burns. Mary Hunt with us today. Great, great input. Tips for raising financially confident kids. And in the meantime, you do some great parenting at the same time. Great conversation with Mary today. Award-winning, best-selling author, over 1 million books in print, a syndicated columnist, as well as somebody who's been on incredible shows like Dr. Phil, Oprah, Good Morning America, and now Homeward. Da-da-da-da. Mary, great to have you with us.
Thank you.
You know, as
Thank
we're talking so through this, I'm thinking about a story that happened with my children. I have all girls, so of course we have no hormones or drama in our life. And I remember at about the same time, I think maybe they were in middle school, Kathy and I started giving them an allowance to buy clothes. One of them bought one outfit, and one went to Target, she called it Target, and bought about 12 for the same amount of money. Halfway through, the one who had bought all the clothes paid $30 for a dress that had cost my other daughter much more because mm-hmm. she needed, you know, money badly. We never looked at that as a bad thing. It never happened again. And so what you're saying is sometimes you have to help kids through education and through sometimes some hard times learn how to manage money. We all have to do that as adults.
Absolutely. And you know what I think you've just spoken to is that safety net.
Yeah.
We need to teach our kids about money and allow them to manage it while they're still over the safety net of the family. When they make a horrible decision, like buying a $150 dress instead of $530 dresses or whatever it would be, allow them to make that when they're at home. Because if you don't, folks, listen, everybody listen to me. If you don't do this, the minute those kids leave home, someone else is going to trust them with a lot of money. It's called MasterCard and Visa,
yeah.
And it's not unusual for a college freshman to have $5,000 in open credit. And they're going to make some bad decisions that are going to be lifelong disasters, potentially. So far better you do this while they're still at home, and nothing bad is going to happen.
Great input. Now, what are some specific activities that you can do with your kids, whether the kids are younger or older? We were talking about college, but really it doesn't start in college.
No,
it starts with
no.
younger kids. You started
yeah.
even this what you called the salary with sixth graders. But what are some of those specific activities? Can you take us through some where you can really show kids the true value of money?
Yeah. Well, I think, believe it or not, I think this starts on the way home from the hospital when that baby is born. Parents need to flip into a mode that they realize everything they're doing, their kids are picking it up. You just don't drive through an ATM line and stick your magic plastic in the slot and get money out in eyeshot of toddlers. They don't understand that. I say start teaching your kids about cash. Let them see cash. 2 and 3 years old can start matching nickels and pennies and dimes and put them in a little cup. You teach them, you talk about money as much as easily as you talk about the weather. You know, we value money. We take very good care of it. When we spend the money, we don't have the money anymore. We make a decision. That is the complete opposite of using plastic. And when you pay for, you go through Walmart and pay for your load of stuff, the kid sees you give the lady the card, you get the card back, plus you get all the stuff too. You've got to see this through the eyes of a child. Kids don't understand abstract things like, oh, I get a bill at the end of the month and I pay it all off.
That's good.
Just be careful about the way, let kids see you spending cash. Older children are able to manage money and to understand rules of giving, saving, or whatever your family values are. This is the way you can start teaching them about values and beliefs. I got to tell you that kids will always defer to what they see you do over what you say that you,
Boy,
that
children
you do
see,
or what they should do.
Children see, children do. You know, I was
yeah.
a youth pastor, and what we always say in another life, you know, many years ago at a church, actually not too far from where you live in Southern California, called Mariners Church in
mm-hmm.
Irvine.
Great church.
California. There was a couple who I was so impressed with, and one of the things that they did, and I want to see what you think about this, is at 16, they had three kids. At age 16, the 16-year-old was handed the family checkbook. Now, these were people who had some capacity financially. They didn't live in a poor home, I'll tell you. But they were the ones who managed the checkbook with the help of parents. Instead of just handing them a checkbook, they did the family finances. That meant these were the kids who wrote the bills, and this was before everything could be online. What do you think about that? Age 16, they were handling it. Now, of course, the parents were overseeing. It might have taken more time. What do you think of that?
I think that is fantastic. Absolutely.
Yeah, I do too.
I think that any time that parents can do real-life lessons, I think you need to shield the kids from all of it. I mean, never share with your kids how much debt you have.
Mm-hmm.
And never share with your kids how much money you make.
Mm-hmm.
Kids make conclusions that are not going to be good. And I talk about this in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So kids are not able to handle adult-size concerns and woes. You don't want your kids to think they're going to the poorhouse. If a child asks you, Mommy, Daddy, how much does Daddy make? You say, well, honey, why do you want to know that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because if the kid wants to know to brag to their friends, that's not good. If they want to know because they're so worried that you're going to the poor farm, that's not good. So you tell them, you know, that's information from Mommy and Daddy. We have some of our personal things. You know, we get to have personal information, like you have privacy too. But I want to assure you that you don't need to worry that we manage money that God has sent to us. And, I mean, you can turn this into a good lesson.
Yeah, it's great input.
The book is just filled with this kind of thing. And, you know, another thing, folks, if you want to teach your kids about credit card debt, you know, do a pretend game. When one of these applications come in the mail, you know, sit the kids down and say, look at this fine print. You can't believe. On the front, the big print is so great. You know, we get all this stuff. Let's see what this fine print. Show them about APRs, how to figure out interest. Say, let's say we go and put a $10,000 speedboat on here. What's this going to cost us over the years? Kids are fascinated by it, and I'll tell you what's going to happen. You're going to turn out kids who cannot understand what's the big deal. Of course you don't run up debt. I mean,
right.
These are my boys. They can't believe that I wrote this book. Like, what is the big deal? You know, so what? We've never had credit card debt. That's the way it's supposed to be. Well, and that's how I want your kids to grow up, too.
I don't want
them to go through the horrible pain of learning about debt from having it nearly ruin their own lives.
Well, that's because you were proactive and intentional. Hey, we don't have much time left, but I want to ask you, you instituted a rule that says, first we give, then we save. And I want you to talk about why, you know, savings and giving was so pivotal for your own boys, but also pivotal in terms of how we go about managing our personal finances.
Well, it came from my own life. I mean, I grew up in a pastor's family, so it's not like giving and tithing were foreign to me. But I had never adopted that into my life. And I always thought when I get rich, I'll do it. Because my thought, like so many people, was you give and save if you've got anything left over. So that was a really important value for us to teach to our kids, and we made it a rule. We were supplying the money. They were managing under our tutelage, under our supervision, so they would follow our rules. I think giving and saving are so important because it brings balance to our lives. I call them the silver bullets of personal finance management. Giving slays that enemy in our lives called greed. Because giving shows how grateful we are. I might not have it all, but I have enough. I have enough to share with others. And that's a good thing because, you know, kids grow up greedy. I call them ugly attitudes of entitlement.
Right.
And giving is one of the ways that it opens a child's eyes to the world and to allow them to decide where they're going to give, who's going to get that money, who are they going to help, how to determine if a needy person truly is. I mean, are you a good steward of that money? The second thing is to always save, because that slays that thing called fear. Fear that we're not going to have enough money. Fear that I'm going to run out of money. Money in the bank changes everything, and I think that that's a principle from God's Word. He tells us, you know, that we are to save, and we're not to be presumptive. And two great principles saw our children through so well. Both boys, when they turned 16, had saved enough money, honestly, saved enough money to buy their first cars, all cash. Now, they were clunkers, and I got to tell you that over the years, I was a little embarrassed that my boys actually spent 10% and saved 90%. They became so frugal. I go, oh, no, I've created something. But no, it was wonderful. They taught themselves to be frugal. So now, in their adult lives, it comes normal. That's their natural way of life.
It's great input. Mary Hunt with us. Thank you so much, Mary. We've got to have you come back and we can talk more about it. Roger, basically what she's saying is, you know, the best things in life aren't things. And it's teaching our kids a stewardship that really does make a difference.
Amen to that. And Homeward is the place that you can turn to learn more about these different resources. I mean, if you go to homeward.com, go to the articles and media section, and you will find a variety of different resources. For example, one that was created for us by Steadfast Companies, a leading real estate investment trust company. If you go to homeward.com, hit the article and media button, and then just type in the word steadfast, STEADFAST. You'll find a couple of different tip sheets there that will help you as mom and dad kind of come together around some biblical principles and then say, okay, wait, we can teach our kids about saving and spending and tithing, investing, giving, that type of thing. Go to homeward.com, HOMEWORD.com. If you're not there already, hit the articles and media section. Type in the word steadfast where it says get answers, STEADFAST. tip sheets come up. You can print them out, download them, do whatever you want with them. We highly recommend these resources. Those are free, by the way. And now for Dr. Jim Burns, our engineer Ben Camp, and the rest of the staff, I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening. Join us again next time right here for another edition of Homeward. Homeward with Jim Burns is a production of the Homeward Center for Youth and Family at Azusa Pacific University.